in terms of the survey results, that there was optimism that things may improve over the next few years.
China's domestic markets open slowly. It's Wednesday, January 31st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Afghan refugees living month to month in Pakistan. New Zealand blasts off to the final frontier. Coral reefs are feeling the heat. Delivery robots, another smoking study. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The American Chamber of Commerce in China, in releasing the results of its annual survey of its members Tuesday, said while they are more confident China will further open up its market to foreign investment, three-quarters say they do not feel welcomed by the Chinese government. Lester Ross is the Chamber Policies Committee Chairman.
One of the difficulties that our members find and that we find in terms of meetings with Chinese government officials and others is an unwillingness to acknowledge that their market is less open than ours to begin with. And so to the extent that a retaliatory action is taken by the United States, then they are tempted to reciprocate, even though the imbalances already exist. So there's a difficulty here. You notice in terms of the survey results that there was optimism that things may improve over the next few years. But the question becomes, how soon will that take place?
The survey found 46% of respondents expressed confidence the government would further open China's market to foreign investment within 3 years. Singapore-based IHS Global Insight Chief Economist Rajiv Biswas tells VOA's Victor Beatty, for years, foreign multinationals have had to overcome the obstacles of regulation, the competitive practices of their domestic rivals, and the protection of intellectual property rights. But he sees reasons for the shift in attitude.
One of the most important is that during 2017, when President Xi Jinping visited Washington, D.C., in the first half of the year, he did take some measures to liberalize the economy for foreign investment. But what really was significant was what happened when President Trump visited Beijing in November last year. And at that point, China rolled out quite a big package of liberalization measures for foreign investment, particularly in the financial services sector. It announced substantial steps to liberalize foreign ownership limits for banks and also for insurers and fund managers. So all of those things, I think, have put foreign firms in a better mood in terms of their perception that China is willing to open up more. And a lot of the government rhetoric at a very high level is also in the same direction. One of President Xi Jinping's key economic advisors, who is expected to be at the forefront of driving reforms in the next 5 years, is Liu He, and he gave a speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos last week in which he said that China will be taking further reform measures to open up its economy. And these may surprise foreign investors because, according to his view, they're going to be quite substantial steps. And he signaled that a lot of these reforms to liberalize China further will be in the services sector, with further reforms, particularly in financial services.
Despite this, William Zaret, the chairman of that American Chamber of Commerce in China, warned that Chinese officials have told him there will be retaliation if President Donald Trump launches trade remedies and disputes over technology, steel, and other issues.
The U.S. has been trying to address a very substantial bilateral trade deficit with China for many years now. And President Trump has gone on the front foot in trying to force further change from China to try to reduce those imbalances. And he has had some success during his visit to China last year. There were quite large trade deals announced from China to buy U.S. products, such as Boeing commercial jet aircraft. But I think much more is needed on a sustainable basis to really address that big deficit. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing a number of actions from the U.S. to try to put more pressure on China. We saw one of those just a few days ago with higher tariffs on solar panels. And for some time now, there's an investigation that's been going on in the areas of steel, aluminium, and also in the case of China, on intellectual property rights. So I think those could be used as areas where the U.S. feels that it's not being treated fairly by China, and that those areas should be addressed by China, and therefore may well take further action to try to force change.
Rajiv Biswas said neither country wants a trade war. He said with its sizable trade surplus, China would stand to lose more than the United States. He believes both countries, the world's top two economies, will work to improve their trading relationship rather than block trade. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. As trade tensions rise with the United States, China prepares to retaliate. Australian man jailed for filming Cambodian opposition rally denied bail. 10 Westerners facing pornography charges in Cambodia. Criticism growing over delays to next Thai poll. Defectors torn by North Korean Olympic charm offensive. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. According to the United Nations Refugee Agency, 1.4 million registered Afghan refugees are in neighboring Pakistan. Registered Afghan refugees are given a proof of registration card that allows them to legally stay in Pakistan. Since the process of issuing the cards began in 2014, the Pakistani government has extended the validity deadline six times. At the beginning of this year, Pakistan again extended the deadline for 1 month until today, January 31st. VOA Asia's Sana Ali spoke with Kaiser Khan Afridi, the UNHCR spokesperson in Pakistan, who explained the current situation of Afghan refugees in Pakistan and the process of their voluntary repatriation to Afghanistan. He expressed concern about the extension of the deadline for just a month.
In Pakistan, there are nearly 1.4 million Afghan refugees remains in Pakistan, while 4.2 million Afghan refugees have gone back to Afghanistan since 2002. In 2017, almost 60,000 registered Afghan refugees opted to return home under the UNHCR facilitated voluntary repatriation program. The voluntary repatriation at this point in time has been suspended for winter break. Last month, the government of Pakistan extended the stay of Afghan refugees and extended the POR cards for 1 month. And UNHCR is concerned, of course, that the decision to extend these cards for only 1 month impacts the whole Afghan refugee population. Of course, there are 1.4 million Afghan refugees who face an uncertain future concerning the country's state. This decision runs counter to the conclusions of the 29th Tripartite Commission meeting held on 30th November 2017 in Istanbul, which emphasized the need for extending this POR for at least 1 year until December 2018.
The meeting had discussed that it would need to be extended for 1 year. Is that correct?
1 year. And UNHCR call upon the government to continue ensuring that the repatriation of refugees needs to be voluntary, safe, and dignified, and gradual. Possible repatriation or attempts to intimidate or harass refugees into volunteering to return would violate the international principle of refugee protection. Government of Pakistan, actually, we are in contact with the relevant authorities, and we were informed that the Ministry of Saffron, they are working on a future plan which will be presented to the federal cabinet in a year or two, or maybe they have already submitted the plan. UNHCR will welcome and support any plan policies adopted by the government of Pakistan that retains the voluntary repatriation in dignity and safety, and which continues to uphold the protection of refugees that promote an effective management of cross-border movement. I would like to call upon the international community to continue providing assistance to the government of Pakistan and the host community in Pakistan, as well as it is imperative to provide targeted assistance, development assistance in Afghanistan to support sustainable reintegration of returning back in Afghanistan.
Afridi says the UNHCR is hopeful that Pakistan will extend the deadline further.
Of course, we are hopeful, we are optimistic that the government of Pakistan will extend the validity of the POR card and the Tripartite Commission meeting. The government and the people of Pakistan have demonstrated exceptional hospitality and generosity to Afghans for nearly four decades. UNHCR remains confident that the same humanitarian principle will continue to govern the policies and practices that have been maintained up until now. So we are hopeful that the government will extend the POR cards.
And one of the things you mentioned earlier was about how the earlier meeting on the 30th of November, they had discussed the need to extend the POR deadline for about a year. And according to some media reports, the deadline to extend it for just a month till 31st January was something of a surprise to the UNHCR. So if you could comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a meeting in Istanbul last year on 30th of November, in which all these three parties, including the government of Pakistan, the government of Afghanistan, and UNHCR, reaffirmed their commitment to uphold the principle of voluntary repatriation and emphasized that they will extend the POR card beyond, until 2016.
Afridi said the UNHCR Centers for Voluntary Repatriation of Registered Afghan Refugees will remain closed until March during the winter season. Qaisar Khan Afridi, the UNHCR spokesperson in Pakistan, spoke with VOA Asia's Sana Ali. Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump's rejection of peace talks with the Taliban has provoked a strong reaction from the Islamist insurgency, while lead Afghan clerics advocate against continuation of military action to end the war in Afghanistan. Trump vowed to, quote, finish them in the wake of a wave of terrorist attacks in Kabul. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. China's Xinhua News Agency says a plan to launch 10 satellites over a widely disputed sea starting next year is intended to help guide China to prime natural resources. The island province of Hainan's Sanyan Institute of Remote Sensing plans to launch the satellites from 2019 through 2021. Analysts say China ultimately hopes to find prime fisheries in the 3.5 million square kilometer sea before someone else does. They also suggest the space surveillance will help spot and quickly follow up what other countries are doing at sea and assist the military. Meanwhile, a small spaceflight startup has successfully sent a rocket into low Earth orbit for the first time from a base in New Zealand. Rocket Lab says it is the first company to send satellites into space from its own launch facility on New Zealand's North Island. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand has joined a small and exclusive club of spacefaring nations. Rocket Lab's launch in the Mahia Peninsula could allow smaller companies to launch satellites into space for far cheaper than its traditional rivals, at around $4.9 million per launch. The rocket used an engine designed and made in New Zealand. In what's believed to be a first, the engine used electric pumps to drive parts of the machinery. The joint US-New Zealand startup aims to disrupt the established space sector by launching its satellite-carrying rockets every week. They'd have a wide range of uses, from monitoring crops to providing internet service. The company hopes to begin commercial launches next year. Peter Beck is the founder and chief executive of Rocket Lab.
Think of Rocket Lab as a glorified freight company. What we're doing is we're taking spacecraft and placing them on orbit to provide services down on Earth. So people don't realise how much they rely on space infrastructure, things like GPS, satellite television, it's all coming from space. And these two particular satellites, they were weather satellites, providing weather services and Earth observation.
The New Zealand Space Agency says the successful launch would boost the country's presence in the international space industry. The government agency wants global companies to manufacture satellites and rockets in New Zealand. The Rocket Lab test flight also placed a highly reflective sphere in orbit. It looks like a large disco ball and should be visible to the naked eye as it crosses a twilight sky. The company says its Humanity Star is an attempt to create a shared experience for everyone on Earth. Eventually it will fall to a height where it will burn up. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, 10 foreigners have been arrested in Cambodia on charges of pornography after they were caught dancing suggestively during a private pool party. The group was arrested last Thursday in Siem Reap. A defense attorney insists none of the photos from the party show them undressed or engaging in sex. Uncover great stories and features every day at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, all coral reefs go through bleaching episodes, and these episodes of drought or extreme heat can hurt even the healthiest of reefs. But climate change means more heat more often, and new research is showing the world's reefs don't have time to recover. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
The past 2 years have been tough on Australia's Great Barrier Reef. Drought and extreme heat have led to extensive coral bleaching and coral disease. These events have happened to reefs throughout history, but in a new study, British researchers say climate change is causing these extreme events so often the world's reefs cannot recover.
Once they started occurring at a regional scale around the early 1980s, they were hitting a given location roughly once every 25 years, whereas by 2016, the frequency of these bleaching events had shortened to once every 6 years.
That is exactly what climate models predict. Small rises in average temperature lead to a world where extreme temperatures become routine.
But what's happening now is that because the background temperatures are so warm, smaller and smaller anomalies are causing bleaching, and even warm summers outside of El Niños are causing coral bleaching, which is why we're seeing the frequency of these events shortening.
The real problem is the loss of the world's coral reef has extended consequences beyond just the loss of what have been called the rainforests of the ocean.
Well, coral reefs cover less than 0.1% of the ocean surface, and yet they house about a third of all marine biodiversity. So anyone who cares about extinction, who cares about biodiversity, needs to be concerned about the future of coral reefs. They also provide the food security and livelihoods to hundreds of millions of people throughout the tropics.
The world's average temperature has already risen 1 degree Celsius, and the researchers are urging more aggressive actions like those called for in the Paris Climate Accords. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia, an American news outlet that made a rare visit to North Korea to cover the country's Olympic team, is being criticized by the Trump administration for its coverage. In the words of one official, they depicted the, quote, most totalitarian country on the planet as a cheerful winter holiday resort. You'll be cheerful and informed when you visit the VOA Asia Facebook page. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, coming to a hotel or hospital near you may be a robot that makes deliveries. Companies are creating robots to help with the workload and make human workers more efficient. One such company is Silicon Valley-based Savioke. VOA's Elizabeth Lee met a couple of its robots at a hotel in Las Vegas.
Two new employees at the Renaissance Las Vegas Hotel have been getting quite a reaction from the guests here.
They open the door, it's always a wow.
The robots named Elvis and Priscilla, after Elvis Presley and his former wife, make room service deliveries at the hotel.
Most commonly it's toothbrush, toothpaste, towels, newspapers.
But they'll also deliver food and beverage in the evenings, especially between midnight and 6 a.m. when your staff is minimal.
Embracing technology such as this robot, made by the company Savioke, is one way hotels around the world are attracting customers. It comes at a time when there are more options for travelers than ever before.
Our business is very competitive, whether it's Airbnb or it's another brand, and so you have to stay one step ahead of the competition.
In addition to delivering towels and toiletries at hotels, these relay robots are also finding other applications.
At this FedEx repair facility, a robot named Sam can deliver broken cell phones to technicians to get them fixed. And at a hospital, a robot can deliver pharmaceuticals and supplies.
Or lab equipment, or lab samples, specimens, from one place to another. So there's a lot of stuff that moves around in hospitals, and Relay is great for, you know, anything that's like this size.
Savio calls this a Relay robot. It has a map of its environment and uses a laser and 3D camera sensor to help it navigate. It can also provide information to the user, such as a hospital or hotel.
Typically, hotels like that feature, that they can see what the robot sees. But we've also, you know, the cameras are here and down, so they're not like, you know, monitoring people. They're focused on seeing what's in front of the robot and what might be blocking it.
For world travelers, Savioke's robot has already found work at hotels in North America, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. The monthly rental fee for this employee that works 24 hours a day without lunch breaks, around $2,000. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Las Vegas.
We eagerly await for the robot music to catch up with its technology. New research shows there's no safe level of smoking. VOA's health correspondent Carol Pearson reports there's movement to raise the age for Americans to legally buy cigarettes.
Even if you smoke just one cigarette a day, the odds for having a heart attack or stroke greatly increase. British researchers analyzed more than 140 studies, concluding just one cigarette daily increases heart attack risk by 50% and the risk for stroke by 30% compared to those who have never smoked. Despite 50 years of studies showing the harm smoking can do, 1 billion people worldwide still smoke, and 7 million people die from tobacco-related causes each year. Most people start smoking before they turn 21, and many start as young teenagers. Now the American Lung Association is prodding U.S. states to raise the legal age for buying cigarettes to 21.
It cuts off access for people 15 to 17 years old, because they, a lot of times, they'll go to their older friends who are 18 in high school, but they're not as likely to hang around with people who are 19 or 20 or 21.
So far, five states have raised the cigarette buying age. Tracking who smokes is important, so health agencies can provide programs to help smokers quit and prevent others from getting started.
The countries that have had the greatest declines seem to have multiple tobacco control measures in place.
Some of those measures include raising taxes on tobacco products to make it more expensive to purchase, especially for teenagers, banning smoking in public and workplaces, and banning advertising of tobacco products.
We don't know if there's a single one strategy that works more effectively than others, but collectively, the tobacco control policies that are promoted by the global tobacco control community and the World Health Organization, if implemented as designed, they do work.
Despite declines in smoking rates in many countries, Gakiduk does not see the number of smokers dropping, simply because the population keeps growing. But many of those who do try to quit, especially if they use anti-smoking aids, can eventually stop and reduce their risks from tobacco-related diseases. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We invite you to listen to us on the radio when you're out and about, wherever you happen to be in the region. If you're in the Philippines at Quezon City, listen to us at DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines in Diliman. Thanks to everyone there who is listening today. Our thanks go out as well to Tracy Carter. He's our director. Rob McLean, our engineer. Managing editor Diane Gao. Skylar Ogden. Ira Melman and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.